When Lula finished his first two terms as Brazilian president in 2010, he had an insanely high approval rating. More than 80% of the country said that his government had done a good or excellent job, and he easily got his hand-picked candidate Dilma Rousseff elected as his successor. Now in his third term as president, Lula has encountered a very different scenario. Brazil is more polarized than it was 14 years ago. An economic success is no longer enough to make him popular with groups that might otherwise be resistant to his charms. Several opinion polls show a recent decline in Lula's popularity. This week, we discuss what's happening and whether it's time for him to hit the panic button. My name's Ewan Marshall, Deputy Editor of the Brazilian Report, and this is Explaining Brazil. If you like Explaining Brazil, you should subscribe to the Brazilian Report, the journalistic engine behind this podcast. We're an independent organisation funded by our subscribers, and you can help us stay independent and continue to produce award-winning journalism. Our work has been recognised for its quality, and we've won several international awards. And the Brazilian Report was recently nominated for Best News Website in Latin America by the World Association of News Publishers, WANIFRA. To continue this work, we need your support. If you're already a subscriber, you can go the extra mile and join our Buy Me a Coffee fan page. And in return, you'll get exclusive perks like special newsletters and behind the scenes content, as well as a shout out here on our podcast. And today, I'd like to thank our Buy Me a Coffee members: Jaciara de Oliveira, Stu Whitaker, Carson Allen, Gabriel Luca, Andrei Novoseltsev, Pan Ludvik, Leslie Seal, Mark Hillary, Louise Renz, Erwan Menais, Aaron Berger, Kars Vriesvik, Alistair Townsend, Miller Renacido, Peter Abramson, David Dixon, José Ozzy Stankovic, Emerging Market Muser, Anna Lund, Peter Suffren, Anderson da Silva, and someone who wishes to remain anonymous. And our Buy Me a Coffee members come from all over the world, so please, if we're butchering the pronunciation of your name, please send us an email. If you too believe in the importance of independent journalism, and if you want to hear your name on our podcast, go to buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report and subscribe to one of our membership levels. Click on buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report to find out more. Mario Sergio Lima is a senior Brazil analyst at Medley Global Advisors, a columnist for the Brazilian Report, and a regular friend of the show. Mario, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Now, several pollsters have shown a decline in the president's popularity. According to Atlas Intel, Lula's personal popularity has dropped from 52% in January to 47% now. According to Quaesci, the decline was even sharper, from 60 to 51%. At Datafolha, they surveyed only the residents of the city of São Paulo, but they found similar results. The government's disapproval rating in Brazil's largest city has risen 9 percentage points since August to 34%. So, what's going on?
Well, I think that you may say that it happened somewhat of a perfect storm for the government. First of all, I think there are some poor results regarding the fight against the dengue fever. But what I think it's mostly concerning for the government is that despite Brazil's having recorded a growth substantially higher than what people expected at the beginning of the year, inflation under control and unemployment dropping to the point that it's kind of surprising that it's dropping with inflation under control. Despite all of those macro factors, people's expectation for economy is worsening, and also their own view for the current economy is dropping a lot. So I think that this created some alarming signs for the government, especially because it seems like there's no way that the people are not really knowing or feeling the improvement in the economy that the macro data is showing. I have some theories. We had some surge in food prices, which is basically when you think about inflation, you initially think about food prices because that's impacted very fast and affects everyone equally. Of course, the poorer more than the richer, but affects everyone to the same degree. And so it feels like, well, they say inflation is improving, but my supermarket cart is getting smaller because I can't pay for food for my house. So that happened. It's a seasonal effect, mostly due to the El Nino. But it helps create this kind of malaise, if you will, about Brazil's about the economic situation. And also, I think that seems that there is a very, very, very defined opposition in which, and that opposition kind of regroup itself. And what I mean by that is not only their representatives, but also the way that they put forward their own narratives, or meaning their own spin on situation. This has been growing sharply against the government, which would explain not only the drop in the positive evaluations, but the increase on the negative, because you could have just lost and people would go, oh, it's regular, which is not that necessarily concerning. So what happens is you're kind of losing the public battle for narrative, which I think it's what is concerning the government more than anything else.
Now, Atlas Intel shows that voters believe the Lula administration is doing better than Jair Bolsonaro's in every single aspect, from diplomacy to foreign policy, from health policy to education. But nevertheless, his net approval rating is negative on all these aspects. That is, there are more people who disapprove of the Lula government's handling of each issue than there are of people in favour. Does that tell us more about Bolsonaro's time in office than it does about Lula's third term?
Yes. I think at some point when you look at this, when you aggregate both of those results, you would see that, okay, people are rather unhappy with this government. They are really unhappy. And I think that there are reasons to be unhappy, especially because when this government is started with a promise, and you're basically not seeing a lot of that coming to fruition. I think that people expected the government to be more of a centrist type of government, kind of like using this broad arc of allegiances that they built in the election to actually try to grow upon that. And you see Lula, especially when he talks publicly, and he's doing a lot of that on foreign policy when he tried to stamp this whole left-wing agenda. He's using foreign policy. You actually see him radicalizing rather than trying to push for a more peacefulness within your own country. And you fail to see results coming from, because even if economy, like I said, economy improves, but the feeling that of this improvement is not really being felt. I mean, people are they have jobs, people have increased, salary has been increasing, poverty has been dropping sharply. But at the same time, it's like you don't have that feel-good factor yet for a lot of reasons, some of which the government has no control of. So that's when we. But what also this shows is that despite the opposition regrouping and trying to get strong again, when people look at the main oppositor of Lula, the leader of this opposition, the guy is way more rejected than Lula. So that didn't really change. To the fact point that if an election was held today, Lula will probably win, maybe even easier than the tight race that he got, which basically shows that people were really unhappy and they remain unhappy with what the previous president was. Which, I mean, by all means, it's fair. Bolsonaro was one of the worst presidents that Brazil ever had, maybe the worst. But at the same time, they all of the hopes that they got for this new, it's not being fulfilled, which I also think that is a fair assumption for regarding this government. So while that may not be as concerning in terms of electoral impact, it does goes to show that there's a big contingent of Brazilians which are more or less like orphan in terms of what they expect, of their own expectations and what they are seeing as a reality.
Now, some analysts have criticized this government for not bringing anything new to the table, saying that Lula's third term lacks its own identity. And indeed, if we look at it, his flagship programs are more or less rehashed versions of things that his government did 15 to 20 years ago. Do you think the government is relying too much on the fact that Lula isn't Jair Bolsonaro?
I mean, I do agree with that analysis. I think that you're missing a flagship, something like why should this government matter? I do understand at some point there was a lot of destruction of what we had going on in Bolsonaro's administration, even when he increased the social welfare program, the Bolsa Família, that he rebranded the Auxílio Brasil. He basically worsened the program. So it was like a higher benefit, but at the same time, with a lower type of directing to the people that actually need, and also to the demands that you expect from those people. So I do understand that there's a lot of reconstructing that needed to be done. So it really makes it hard for you to get a some sort of a flagship. But at the same time, I feel that there is some what you can may say. It's almost like they're tired. The guys from PT, they're tired, and like they had a formula that worked 15 years ago, and they felt like okay, it's just that, and they are failing to actually understand how the world is progressing. First of all, I think that they have been failing to address the fact that Dilma, you may even question the legitimacy of the impeachment. But you can't really question the fact that Dilma was a very poor president, and her own take on economic policy actually brought Brazil to the worst 2-year slump that we ever had in terms of GDP. So that is something that you need to assess, that you need to understand. And you need to understand that there were some things that were happening from there to now that are helping economy somewhat. You may actually believe there's some reason to believe now that the labor reform that Temer passed is doing a lot is helping a lot in this improvement in the job market. We have been having some gains in productivity that. And I think one of the ways to actually exemplify this is the fact that Lula they announced a program to try to tackle this whole delivery and Uber economy, like food delivery and Uber economy, and they presented something that has been so far widely rejected by the people that actually are doing this job, you know, by the drivers, by the delivery people. They have rejected it. So it really seems like they felt out of contact with what are the real needs in the ground. And they also, they are not like moving forward in terms of some promises, like especially environment. You had some improvement in terms of Amazon deforestation, but at the same time in the Cerrado you had an increase in the deforestation. So it seems like the government's not guilty about it, but at the same time it's not, you're not really showing any results that would make people understand that the change has been positive. So it's basically like, okay, it's better than the previous one, but and that's a low-hanging fruit. So now what's now? And they are, I think they really need to connect to those needs. And some of it would actually make them rethink a lot of the things that they thought it was the right way to go that failed miserably when Dilma was a president. So I think they need to tackle this in a more proactive manner.
Mario, where's the government doing well and where isn't it doing well?
I think that we are seeing improvement in the social welfare programs. I think we are seeing some improvement in economic outlook despite the huge budget deficit that we had last year. I think we are actually looking at a budget going into a more healthy management of the budget, because I am one of those people that believes that the surplus that Bolsonaro had in his last year with Paulo Guedes was basically almost like a fraudulent, not in the sense of a criminal or anything, but it wasn't real. It wasn't a real surplus. So I think that the economy, they are trying to tackle the situation, although you could say that they could have done more. I think they have been improving in the relationship with the Congress to pass the key legislation. So I would put those as positives of this administration. But I think the negatives, I would say, they haven't really tackled this whole new economy in the sense of, okay, maybe this is not going to be a publicly pushed, public investment pushed economy. You need to improve markets. You need to improve the way that the environment for businesses to prosper. I think they still find they're still lacking on that. And it's something that I don't believe that is their fault, but I do think that they needed to show more palpable improvements in tackling crime, especially petty crime, which is mostly because when you look at the death, like homicides, it had dropped in 2023, but the sense of security, I think that it has actually worsened. It seems like it goes a long way into the narrative of the opposition, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like the government really has a proposal or has a plan to actually tackle those issues, which it's one of the main concerns that Brazilians have regarding their own lives.
It's funny that you mentioned petty theft and how that has affected Brazilians. I talked to an Uber driver who had his phone stolen recently, and he's going to have to keep paying for that device for the next 10 months. And after he had his phone stolen, he had to stop working for 2 weeks, which wrecked his household income and left him in debt. You know, with gig work becoming so important to the overall economy, theft really does have a big impact on some people, right?
Well, I'm just saying it's a common sense to call it petty theft when there's no real bodily harm in the crime or deaths, which is even worse. But what I think is that it's not petty when people that actually are losing their assets are not well-off people, or people that are actually, they really struggle to replace whatever they have, whatever they lose in this kind of crime. And they feel like there's some tolerance from the left, especially, and from the government in terms of these petty crimes. Like, it's almost, okay, maybe that's not really that bad, you know, like there's some social issues that are more important than that, but it really creates some sort of a negative feel in the people that, I mean, if you just lost your cell phone and you needed to work, if a guy robbed your car, if you have a motorcycle and they rob it, I mean, that really worsens the feeling, you know, and you actually don't think that the government's really empathic to the situation. I mean, you, those people may be right, maybe wrong. It's not really up to me to say. But the feeling that you don't feel like empathy, you don't feel like, okay, the criminals are the bane of society and we should be trying to hunt them down. I think that people actually would put the blame on some laxing policies. And I mean, now thinking about public policy, the alternatives, like really trying to arrest a lot of people and kill a lot of people, like you've seen been doing in places like El Salvador. I mean, that's really not a good policy by any means. That's terrible policy, but it's popular policy. So you really need to have a proposal that actually improves the situation without creating this sort of inequilibrium, social inequilibrium, and a lot of unfair arrests. So I think that there's this is a tricky one, but I think the government has failed to deliver on this kind of policy, and that's really important. As you look at also in the Atlas poll, you see that this is the main concern of people is the public security, which also you can say that the second one is corruption, which seems to me like the really out of the blue, but that really goes to show how opposition, despite being unable to actually perform in the arenas in which they should be performing, actually trying to improve policy or try to fiscalize to make fiscalization of the power, they're actually good at putting forward those narratives, because then the government is actually trying to face when they are trying to tackle inequality. That's really not the main concern of most people's minds. People are concerned with corruption, and we haven't seen any case of corruption in this government yet. So I mean, this goes to show how the opposition has been able to win the narrative dispute within society without actually being able to prove that they are the best solution. They're just being good at reducing the approval rate of the government, which, I mean, it's part of what they're there for.
And Lola has asked his team to step up their communication strategy, suggesting that they haven't been able to take credit for their accomplishments in office so far. Many experts agree that the government's messaging has been abysmal, but is this just a matter of communicating things better, or are there deeper dynamics at play? Because from what you've just said, I think you're probably leaning towards the latter, right?
I think that there is a concerning communication problem. I think that they still they failed to actually use this type of social media communication in a more proactive manner. So okay, there is a concern, but there's also the fact that they do not have like that flagship program to actually, you know, like be hammering down in the so. There is also the lack of something to show, which also is not helpful. So you don't have a lot to show, and you poorly communicate it. So it's a recipe for a disaster. But at the same time, I think that there are some issues which it's very difficult to actually. I think that especially the far right, and this is something that has been happening not just in Brazil, but everywhere in the world, which has been paying dividends in terms electoral terms to the far right. You've just seen Portugal, the Chega movement, which is almost akin to a Portuguese fascism, has quadrupled their size in the Congress. You see in the U.S. there's the GOP. Is actually the Trump party now. So most of the people that actually survived there are the radicals rather than the moderates. So I think you really see like a shift. So, I mean, there is like this kind of informational bubble in which those people live, which I think it's almost like maybe it's a losing effort to try to communicate with those people, because I mean, there are people that actually believe that you can get autism from vaccination. How can you tell those people that no, it doesn't happen? You can't. You know, like people are really used to hearing the same lies and being reinforced by this type of media and social media information, disinformation or bubble that you can't really attack this in a proper manner. Having said that, the government needs to understand that the idea of that this economy is stupid and that is going to win the election at the end. This may be true when you're considering that, I mean, there's a group of indecisive voters which are not going to fall for any side, and they would probably, like, if the economy is doing good, they would just vote for the incumbent and that's it. It may be true, yeah, but at the same time, I think that you really, it's very difficult to actually breach this kind of environment of disinformation that the people have and should. And I think that what the Workers' Party especially is failing to understand is that even if they won the election, and Lula is a very popular figure, and that's why they won the election, even if they won the election, they really needed to tend to those moderates that could go either way. And those would be the deciding factor. And those guys actually need a little more than just the economy improvement. They actually need to understand that, okay, you guys called me for a great arc of allegiances against the fascism, the far right, and the end of democracy. And now I actually don't see myself in this government anymore. I see you guys repeating a lot of the narrative that your own group had. So, I mean, that's the concern. I think they should really try to use this as an opportunity to say, we may believe that our own left-wing way is the right way. And we will try to force some of those ideas in the government because that's why we were elected too. But at the same time, you don't need to go too much too soon. I think you really need to make faithfuls out of those who actually cast the vote against Bolsonaro more than to Lula. So I think that's a part of the equation that the government really needs to tackle and needs to tackle fast. But having said that, I do think that there's, despite they are concerned, and they are really concerned with the loss of the popularity. It was a steep down. But when you look at overall, Lula is still way more popular than almost any democratic leader in the world. If Macron, Biden, they would kill to have Lula's 51% approval rate. I mean, Milei has the 51% according to some polls, and he's on a honeymoon period in Argentina. So it is a moment where I don't think that we will have very popular governments at all. But that doesn't mean that there are no reasons to be popular. Hopefully there are, because like I said, it can only worsen if they don't try to redo course soon.
So it's not time to hit the panic button just yet.
Not yet, but I think the fact that in 2 months you lost 9 points, I think that it does merit not a panic, but at least an alert button, because it's too big of a step in too little of time. So I think that this is you should at least be concerned, and they are, but they cannot make mistakes like, okay, if that's the case, we're going to like boost public spending to the point that the government, the deficit will jump sky high, and the indebtedness will go jump sky high, and we are not going to actually see this improving economy. So I think they need to be alert, but also have some cool heads to understand the what happened and not just, and of course, stop, like, I would say, like, crossing the streets to sleep in a banana peel. Why does he need to compare what the Gaza, Israel, Gaza, which is, it's maybe closer to a genocide. You might want to believe it's not looking good for Israel, what they're doing. They're way past the self-defense at this point. But I mean, the comparison, even if indirectly, to the Holocaust, I think it was terrible. It was, you just can't defend this. I mean, just like trying to reason with a dictator like Maduro, who really brings nothing to the table anymore. And you just like try to, and the way that you like, you were like so flimsy about Russia and Ukraine, while you also trying to kick the guys that actually helped a coup being avoided in Brazil, which were the US. So I think they really need to improve. And global for, and also one thing that Lula needs to do, and I don't know if he's tired or not, but he really needs to be traveling around the country, trying to do a lot of rally, try to really get a congressman with him to those rallies and try to really show people that he's concerned. Because if you remember, he was traveling when we had a lot of excessive rain in the southern part of Brazil, and he was abroad. Oh, it was justified. It was the G20. You know? I mean, you're not there. You're not really paying the kind of respect and showing people that you care. So I think we really need to turn himself to Brazil rather to abroad, which is the dividends that were paid were already paid. Now he's just losing energy on subjects that are really not a consensus, and he should. If he wants an advice, I think that's one.
It seems that some of the key agenda items of the far right are moving forward in Congress, even though Congress left them dormant while Jair Bolsonaro was in office. I mean, that's the case of an extremely harsh new drug law and a bill to end furlough programs for prisoners. Mario, why is this all happening now?
There's no vacuum of power. So if the government doesn't have its own bills, its own proposals, they will be steamrolled by Congress. Because I mean, especially when the Congress is doing what I would say like populism, it's very difficult to actually oppose populism, because I mean, by definition, it's something that people want. In my opinion, all of those bills are terrible. The discussion about those bills is all terribly done by local media. Local media is just trying to pin this as a government against lawmakers against the Supreme Court, which I think the Supreme Court may have actually jumped the gun in some progressive agenda that's not really there for the society. I think that you can say that despite not winning the election and despite being very rejected, Jair Bolsonaro actually condensated a lot of the key talking points to the far right that didn't have enough. People were not organized in those key points, in those key elements. So the fact that they are makes it so much easier for the Congress to just say, hey, let's do some of this, because who is going to be against a proposal like this? Only criminals, which, I mean, it's a stupid way of looking at this, because you actually need to do good legislation and not the legislation that the majority wants per se, because at some point, if the majority wants a tyranny, you will be passing pro-tyranny legislation, which is not why we have a Congress in the first place. So it has been doing, it's a poor handling by the Congress. It has been poorly discussed in the society, in which people are there, oh yeah, well, we need to tackle this situation. And nobody actually puts a, hey, your Brazil is going against the grain of every modern Western democracy. We're going against everybody else. We're doing things that, I mean, they haven't had positive results when nobody knew better. And now we're just going to rehash this. It's poor legislation. It's doing poorly and is being discussed poorly by the press. Why is this happening now and it hasn't happened when Bolsonaro was president? Two reasons. First, Bolsonaro was congregating this sort of far-right talking points. You really need more than just 4 years to actually change the minds of the majority of people in some key issues. So I think this kind of sentiment wasn't really there when Bolsonaro was president, despite his efforts. So I think that it's there now. So I think it's really happening. I think there is an overall concern that is, in my opinion, fabricated, but there's a concern against the Supreme Court and if they are too powerful for their own good, which is also something that you, after hammering this rhetoric, Bolsonaro actually made this palatable to a lot of people. Even moderates are saying, oh, Supreme Court is doing too much, so let's. I think there's also a problem with lack of accountability by the Congress. I mean, nobody actually is over the congressmen when they do shady things. They are just guilty of a lot of corruption that they haven't done, or because of by consensus they are corrupt. But when they're actually put to test what they vote and how they vote, they are really not, the accountability is not there, which is terrible. And I think media is a part of it, but a lot of this stems from how things are discussed poorly in a social media landscape. And also, I mean, it's a good result. It's where they can show some sort of independence against the government that the government wouldn't want to oppose because, like I said, populism and all. They can show some independence that would also make the government, well, if you want legislation here, you need to pay. You need to roll out the pork barreling because that's how we operate. Now you're not a majority here. So I think that's why it didn't roll in the last 4 years, and it's rolling now.
And we have municipal elections this year. I'm sure the ruling Workers' Party was hoping to use Lula as a figurehead to win mayorships in cities across the country. But with his declining popularity, maybe Lula doesn't quite have the clout that they thought he did.
Yes. But at the same time, when you look at the same poll, Datafolha, when people actually associate a candidate with Jair Bolsonaro, it's like toxic. Nobody wants to vote. I mean, it's like 65% of people wouldn't vote for a Jair Bolsonaro-backed candidate. There is a Jair Bolsonaro-backed candidate who is the current mayor, who by all means is one of the most incompetent mayors that São Paulo ever had. The guy is a terrible, terrible politician, a terrible mayor. I was a child when Pita was mayor, but I can't recall Pita being as bad as Ricardo is. He's terrible.
And that's quite a high bar to clear because São Paulo has had its share of awful mayors over the years.
Yes, and I think he has been passing. But at the same time, you know, like he was in this whole Jair Bolsonaro rally, so he gained favor with the Jair Bolsonaro voters, but at the same time, the ones that reject Bolsonaro still do not associate him with Bolsonaro. So I think that's going to be more clear when the campaign starts, and he's actually in a situation in which he wants to distance himself, but he really can't because he will lose the votes that he has. So I think that I wouldn't say that Lula can't be the kingmaker in São Paulo. I think he can, despite the rejection that Boulos has. But at the same time, seems like Boulos has all of the rejection that he can have. Everybody knows what Boulos is and what he stands for. So it's not like his rejection is going to jump sevenfold just because Lula is supporting it. Actually, the contrary may happen. So that's the crown jewel in this dispute. And I think the Lula candidate's a very live horse in that dispute. Lula is probably going to be supporting Eduardo Paes in Rio de Janeiro, which is the second most important election. And Paes is most likely going to win the election. But when you look at the broad situation, I think the Workers' Party is heading to a very bad election. I think that they may not win São Paulo. If they win São Paulo, it's probably going to be a consolation, a very good one, but a consolation victory, because elsewhere, I think they have poor candidates. I'm not saying that they would be poor mayors if they won the election, but they are poor candidates. They do not have enough clout. They do not have enough support. And with Lula worsening his own stand, I mean, who can get those guys their votes? I think that's a very, very difficult situation for the PT. But I mean, it's not really out of the ordinary. When Dilma was president, I mean, PT had lost a lot of big cities when Dilma was president. Jair Bolsonaro's own supported candidates, the ones that he really backed, they didn't do a good mayoral run in 2020. The centrist clientelist parties may stand to gain more than anyone else in those races, and that would increase the price that they're gonna charge in the Congress to actually vote legislation. So all in all, it's closer to a lose-lose rather than a possible win for Lula.
Mario, thanks so much for joining us today. We hope to speak to you again soon.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Mario Sergio Lima is a senior Brazil analyst with Medley Global Advisors and a columnist at The Brazilian Report. If you like Explaining Brazil, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcasts. Or better yet, subscribe to The Brazilian Report, the journalistic engine behind this podcast. We have a subscription-based business model, and your memberships fuel our journalism and keep us going and growing. Our work has been recognized for its quality, and we've won several international awards. And recently, The Brazilian Report was nominated for Best News Website in Latin America by the World Association of News Publishers, WANIFRA. And to continue this work, we need your support. So go to brazilian.report/subscribe. I'm Ewan Marshall. Thanks for listening, and Explaining Brazil will be back next week.